that down for me, Satan.
Write that down.
Write that. Write that.
With Fumi Saito and Justin Nipper.
Write that down.
Patrons, welcome back. I'm Justin Nipper of FightGameMedia.com and WrestlingObserver.com. It's good to have you back. Thank you for listening. And as always, I'm here with author, broadcaster, professor, because it's the new school year in Japan as of today, Mr. Fumi Saito. Professor Saito, how are you?
Hello from Tokyo.
So do you start school this week?
Guidance this week and regular class next week.
Okay. Yeah. Paperwork.
Yeah, guidance. This is weird because, you know, half the class is still online and, you know, one third of the class, they're trying to have a regular course like with people. And my class is still online and it's like, you have more work, you know, by doing that on your laptop, I guess. I think so. Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. Plus, April 1st is for you in America, April Fool, but it's like a school year and calendar is different in Japan. And April 1st is like going back to school, you know, and
right.
It's just like April, you know, your September, first week of September, different feeling to it, or the first day of work, you know. And April 1st is kind of special feeling. And I had a weird day yesterday. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And also a lot of the businesses in Japan, the fiscal year for them ends March 31st.
March 31st and starts April 1st. Yeah, they do that. That's why the whole country had this strange mode. I mean, yesterday. So I decided to, you know, stay at home and just, I ain't doing this kind of thing.
Yeah. Not part of that tradition, huh?
Yeah. Oh, God. That. Yeah.
So, okay. Today, new profile series. And a new wrestler.
This is going to be a big one. And real educational, I believe.
So we're going to talk about Stan the Lariat Hansen. Stan Hansen.
Yep.
Who is, would you say he's the most famous foreign wrestler in Japan?
Arguably, because it's hard to say, you know, who is bigger, Hulk Hogan or Stan Hansen or Bruiser Brody or the Funks. Or, you know, there are quite a few huge, huge American superstars. But all in all, Stan Hansen had spent more time in front of Japanese audience than ever, you know, than anybody else. And also he was one of the very few American superstars who had worked both Antonio Inoki's New Japan Pro Wrestling and Giant Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling in his prime time. And out of 28-year, you know, wrestling career of Stan Hansen, he had spent 25 years full-time in front of Japanese audience. That's different, right?
That's more than half of his career in total was spent in Japan.
Yeah. Oh, no, not just more than half. It's like 25 years out of 28 years of his career. So,
whew. So it's about, what, 80%, 85%, something like that.
Pretty
knows?
Much. Not that, not that he didn't have, you know, American career, but he did have. But he was one of those people who made this very, you know, important link in business. We'll get to that. You know, for instance, June 26th of 1976, there was Muhammad Ali against Andre the Giant match, historical, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in Shea Stadium in New York City, where they had this closed circuit movie from Tokyo beamed, you know, you'd be watching that big movie screen in the center of Shea Stadium. You'd be watching Ali against Inoki, but the live audience came to see Stan Hansen against Bruno Sammartino. So that was a night too.
So especially around that time, he was a worldwide pro wrestling superstar. Yeah, he was having matches with Bruno Sammartino, and there was the famous match where he inadvertently broke Sammartino's neck.
Yeah, that was the second match, because the reason Vince McMahon Sr. wanted to have Bruno Sammartino against Stan Hansen match at that Muhammad Ali night was that, I guess, Vince McMahon Sr. was afraid that the people won't come and see. You know, you need a huge matchup for the live audience at the Shea Stadium. And previously, like 4 months before that, 6 months before that, Stan Hansen broke Bruno Sammartino's neck during the Madison Square Garden match. He didn't really break his neck, though. It was actually, it's in the video footage. It's a very, very beginning of the match, like 4 minutes in, and the body slam slipped. You know, it kind of, you know, they got sweaty and something happened, and Stan Hansen's body slam somehow Bruno Sammartino was dropped him from his head and broke his neck in two places, but he did get up and finish the match. And old-fashioned promoter Vince McMahon Sr. decided to make an angle storyline out of it. You know, yes, Stan the Lariat Hansen broke living legend Bruno Sammartino's neck with his lariat, and the big comeback match will be on June 25th at the Shea Stadium. So it was a huge main event for that night.
Now, the neck injury, the neck angle, all of that, what Vince McMahon kind of spun after the injury happened, did that carry over to the Japanese scene?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Actually, all right, where do I start from this? Stan Hansen, such a huge, big star and unique superstar that he works like heel but got over like babyface. Mm. And he's the most famous American cowboy in Japan, right? And actually, there's a lot of stories of his own that has a strong link to Japanese wrestlers and Japanese wrestling scene. See, most wrestling fans remember Stan Hansen as All Japan superstar, right?
Right.
But he had New Japan run, strong run against Anthony Inoki's biggest rival for 3 years before that. And the very first tour he had with Japan was with All Japan, actually. Stan Hansen debuted in wrestling January 1st of 1973 in El Paso, El Paso, oh my God, you know. And the January 1st, 1973. So he remembers it very well. And 75, you know, like a second, third year rookie, he made one tour with All Japan Pro Wrestling when he was rookie. You know, people, he was not on top of the tour. The tour is like, with people like Abdullah the Butcher, Ox Baker, then rookie Larry Zbyszko, or people like Bobby Jaggers. And most people thought Bobby Jaggers was better than Stan Hansen at the time, you know?
Hmm. Bobby Jaggers was, I think he wrestled in Portland as well. He was a pretty smooth, technical-ish type of wrestler, whereas Stan Hansen was a pretty new, big, burly football player type at the time.
Yeah, but at the time, they looked similar. You know, big guy, not a bodybuilder type, but not fat, but just big. Mm. And
similar hair, kind of long,
similar
blonde
hair. And almost chubby.
Yeah.
And cowboy nature to it. And so you never know, you know, because while if you're watching that tour as a kid back in 75, you know, Stan Hansen and Bobby Jaggers were just about the same in ability and talent. And it's like, look what happened years later. You know, it's like Stan Hansen's like so much bigger and so important in Japanese wrestling history. But what I'm trying to get to is that he did come to Japan. He had the first tour with All Japan, you know, when he was really rookie, you know. And then that was 1975, okay? Then 1976, he was booked to New York, you know, Vince McMahon Sr.'s WWF. If the champion was Bruno Sammartino or Bob Backlund or somebody, you know, the strong, long-running babyface champion, they have regular new challenger 3 months at a time, huh? Remember?
Yeah. There would always be like a series of challengers who probably weren't going to beat the champion at the time, but that was the WWF style, wasn't it?
The formula, yeah. Because the first meeting, this new challenger will probably beat the champion by countout or something, you know, to establish that he's a worthy opponent, you know. Then get really almost like a bloody second match in. Then third match you know, third month in Madison Square Garden, you climax that thing. Then go on the road show to go to Baltimore, the Washington, D.C., the Philadelphia, the, you know, same lineup, but you go on the road, you know. And Stan Hansen was chosen to become Bruno Sammartino's new partner, the single challenger in 1976.
And this was this was after the injury.
No. This happened during this run.
Oh, okay. So they were paired up. They were having a program together.
Yeah. Or they won't have Madison Square Garden single match. No.
This was also Bruno Sammartino's kind of second run.
Yes. Oh, definitely.
So he's almost
not the early 61, but this time he beat Stan Stasiak to become second to the second reign. Until he was beat by superstar Billy Graham in 77. I'm sorry. Yeah.
So that was Bruno was kind of on his, he was in the twilight of his career. And Bruno Sammartino was
still champion.
And he was also, speaking of Japan, he would work for Giant Baba and he would only work for Giant Baba. Which at the time, so if Stan Hansen was working with WWF at the time, so he was allowed to work with All Japan. That was before the deal with New Japan. I see.
Before he was booked to WWE in New York City. It was like when you go to WWE, WWF, you become your like prime time. You know, like you go to New York and go work in Madison Square Garden. You have WWE run. Then go to other territories as a top talent after that. So this was his very first break, big break.
And it was only a few years after he had debuted, so...
Right, so he was actually a very promising big rookie, you know? Yeah.
And before he wrestled, I know that he played football, so his stamina and his size together was pretty... You don't see that often.
I guess we have to sidetrack for 5 minutes that his background... this is another very unique wrestling story. It's a big wrestling tale. If you know anything at all about West Texas State University in Amarillo, Texas, everybody, you know, attended. Now it's called West Texas A&W University, you know, Agricultural University. Mm-hmm. But at the time, in 60s and 70s, they were called West Texas State University. So many people attended. Dory Funk Jr., Terry Funk, Cowboy, you know, Bob Duncan, Dusty Rhodes, Dick Murdock, little bit, you know, Tito Santana, Manny Fernandez, Young Ted DiBiase, Tully Blanchard, real young Barry Windham, real puppy young blood brothers. They all went to the school. Isn't that strange, something?
Pretty amazing lineup of, I guess we call them pro legends wrestlers. Now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Successful pro wrestlers.
And they all are in the, you know, West Texas State University football team, you know, one time or another. Yeah.
So, and that's where Stan Hansen came from. So he was already kind of, he went to school or he was on the same team as Bruiser Brody, wasn't he?
Yes. Stan, Bruiser Brody, actually Dusty Rhodes too. Yeah.
Wow, somebody, what a football team.
Tito Santana, Manny Fernandez, you know? Yeah, and years later, Tully Blanchard came in and did the quarterback. Ted DiBiase worked, you know, full-time as a team, you know? Barry Windham came in and played. And just all these guys were going to be pro wrestler anyhow. But what's interesting was, though, when Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody was attending school there, Dory Funk and Terry Funk still had Amarillo territory. They had wrestling shows locally. Mm-hmm. All those guys, like young college jock, beer drinking Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody, they all came and watched Terry Funk's match. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they became friends. And then a lot of them wanted to be wrestlers, you know. But at the time, as big as they were and as promising rookie they can be, the Funks were still old-fashioned type, you know, promoter. They're great guys, football players. If they want to be wrestlers, great. But they didn't want everybody to become wrestlers. And everybody knows the secret of the business or something, you know. So actually, Dusty Rhodes never was trained by the Funks. He went to someplace else and got trained and became a wrestler, you know. Bruiser Brody was never trained by the Funks. Instead, he was trained under Fritz Von Erich in Dallas, Bronc Rubik, you know. And not everybody who attended West Texas State University went through the Funks dojo, but eventually, you know, they came back to Texas and worked.
Yeah, all of these guys seem to have crossed paths either at West Texas or in Japan or in the States somewhere. This clique, it's almost like the Minnesota crew later in the 80s.
Yeah, like Road Warriors and their friends. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, very similar.
Kind of, it must be something in the water.
And also the big football players, like a lot of times they're like closet wrestling fans and I want to do this, you know?
Right, and Stan was a fan too, wasn't he? He would, he would go to the Funk shows and...
And also people telling him, you remind, you know, the people, you know, thought, you know, Stan reminded him, you know, of them of Terry Funk, you know?
In what ways?
Oh, just going, running around crazy and doing things. Yeah.
Kind of unpredictable.
Unpredictable. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
very much so.
When Stan Hansen started wrestling around this time
in 73,
it was also a time where the style was different and the way of training was different too, where, and according to his book, Stan Hansen was never too meticulously trained, too properly trained. They just had him go in and wrestle and do what he does. And that style, I think, turned out to be what made Stan Hansen so famous, especially in Japan, was that unpredictable, just go in there and do it kind of style.
And also, can you, picture that in your head. What if Stan Hansen, really clean cut, lock up, you know, collar and elbow tie up into your side headlock, to your hammerlock, into your whatnot, you know, that's not him.
It's very strange even to think about.
He will run into the ring and run into you with big shoulder block instead, right? Yeah. But it's good that the Funks didn't really teach, you know, they taught him, no? But they taught him, but it's not like you have to work like everybody else.
They showed the kind of basic framework and he was allowed to, you know, do his thing eventually.
Yeah, that Terry Funk always told me the same thing too, that your wrestling character is extension of your real self. You know, you can't try to be somebody you are not, you know. So focus and be yourself and see what happens, kind of thing. Anyhow, so he started in January 1st of 1973, in El Paso,
El Paso, Texas.
It's a smaller, you know the town, but is there wrestling? When you hear El Paso now, it's like Eddie Guerrero's hometown.
Right. The Guerreros. That's
But it's like such a Tex-Mex, you know. It's not a big city, you know. But there was wrestling, you know, every night around there, you know. And it was just good old territory days kind of thing, you know. And well, today's fans, you know, today's fans mostly don't know much about what the heck these territories are, you know. Right. There was good 20, 25, you know, healthy wrestling country and companies in America, and they were all coexisting, right?
Right.
At the time. Yeah. Anyhow, so Stan started, and there's another story that we have to add. His later on big rival, Jumbo Tsuruta.
Ah.
Okay. Jumbo Tsuruta went to 1972 Munich Olympic, when he was senior in college. And right, you know, before he graduated from college, he had a press conference that he will start working for Giant Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling and I will become professional wrestler, okay? Mm-hmm. So that was the summer, right after Munich Olympic in 72. Jumbo did not debut in Japan. Baba sent Jumbo Tsuruta to Amarillo, Texas before his Japan debut and had him debut in America, get trained and debut and spend 8 to 10 months in America before he came back to Japan, you know, because he debuted as headliner. Anyhow, that very much rookie year, very first year, Jumbo Tsurura spent one whole, like a 10 months, almost a year in Amarillo. Stan was there.
So they really came up at the same time.
Yeah, and also they were living in the same apartment complex, and they were sharing, you know, these bags of ramen noodle like college students.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What a story that is.
Isn't that good though? And one more person who was in the same apartment, travel together, rent a car together, and get a, you know, cheap motel room together, and travel, train, eat, wrestle like brothers. Bob Backlund. So Stan Hansen, Jumbo Tsurura, and Bob Backlund were all in Amarillo, Texas in the very beginning of 1973. And they spent time. And later on, they all became champions.
And became pretty popular in Japan, too.
Yeah. But not just the local champion or some kind of, you know, any wrestling championship, but what Bob Backlund was, WWF champion before Hulk Hogan era, Stan Hansen, worldwide champion, and Jumbo Tsurura, one of the biggest superstars of 80s and 90s. You know, they all had rookie years together. So I think it's very important, you know?
Yeah, they all became top guys.
Yeah, not just famous, but very much top of the business, yeah.
So and all I think are it's very important. Different, too.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. But you know what? What's interesting is, though, Stan was born in 1949, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Backlund's also 1949. And Jumbo is 1951, you know? And so Stan's a couple years older than, you know, Jumbo. And actually, see, we would always kind of tend to think Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody is about the same age, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Brody was actually 3 years older than Stan, you know?
He's like a big brother.
Yeah, in the football team, senior and a sophomore or something. It's like you are in a different league, right?
Right.
So in the West Texas State University football team, Bruiser Brody was actually a bigger star than Stan at the time, you know? It was interesting, you know? And they wouldn't cross paths until like 76, 77 in Dallas. And somebody from Dallas, you know, after Amarillo and Florida run, Stan Hansen, like a third year, fourth year rookie between WWE Tour, he came to Dallas and worked, you know, Stan worked for Fritz Von Erich for a while. And he was introduced. You know, actually, there's a rookie guy I think he's a friend of yours from, you know, from college. Oh, yeah, who's that? And then Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody met in that sportatorium dressing room and said, oh, wow, it's been a while. And then they met again. And Bruiser Brody was famous for being a really crazy guy in college, too. You know, he chopped up very famous trees on something in the college campus. And also, yeah, he broke a lot of things in college and he got kicked out. And he was famous being a crazy guy. When Stan and Brody met again as a wrestler, I believe sometimes in 75 or 76, Brody told Stan to, you know, to kind of keep it quiet, you know, because he's kayfabing it, meaning that he's being quiet until he learns it.
don't ruin it. Don't blow up his spot.
Yeah. So Stan was like, oh, okay. Brody had his plan as a rookie already. Yeah, he was ready to fool the world.
Both Brody and Hansen seemed to really have a solid kind of plan for what they wanted out of pro wrestling at the time.
I think that was built, that the whole mindset and mentality was built when Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody were together being a tag team for 1 year at the Bill Watts territory. Remember? I believe it was like 75. Yeah. They were Louisiana's Mid-South Wrestling Alliance Association. I don't remember. Mid-South, right?
Mid-South,
Bill
yeah.
Watts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Louisiana, Mississippi, Oklahoma, and what else? Deep South, huh?
Mm-hmm.
These rookies, Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody, Oh, he was already Bruiser Brody, so he must have been after WWE then. See, what's interesting is, though, Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody, both worked for WWE before they were actually famous.
Right.
Stan Hansen against Bruno Sammartino program. Bruiser Brody against Bruno Sammartino program Sammartino being champion. And that was when Frank Grish was named Bruiser Brody. The name was given by Vince McMahon Sr., you know. But after that WWE run, they all came back. Stan and Brody met again in Louisiana and became tag team. And Stan Hansen had two sets of cowboy hats. So he gave one to Brody, you know. So they both have cowboy hat, right? So they can look like a team. They never had matching pair tights. They never had matching pair wrestling boots. They never even had matching anything, you know. But Stan thought, all right, let's wear a cowboy hat. That can make us look like a team. And they both had team, you know, cowboy hat, if you remember the old photo, you know.
Yeah. And that was the first kind of, that's what they really started to become this, not just a team, but a force.
Yeah, and then also Stan told me once that really shaped Frank Gulish's mentality towards promoter. See, at the time, Stan and Brody were, you know, tag team champions in territory, U.S. tag team champions, but they were still rookie. And Bill Watts and his people are making fun of all stupid college football players. And they were paying them like $300 a week, you know?
Yeah, they weren't making too much money. And I don't know.
No.
This was also when Stan Hansen was a teacher at the time, I think, too. I don't know if he still was teaching at this time, but he first was.
Yeah, but the school teacher, you'll still be making a lot of money, you know, with wrestling, more money than a school teacher.
Right, right. But at this time, not yet.
Yeah, right. But even with this $300 a week and paying for your own, you know, hotel room and paying for your hotel and paying for your rental car and gas, and how much can you save? But Stan Hansen, Bruiser Brody, rookie, very bitter rookie towards, you know, the promoter Bill Watts, that I will be saving some money this week, you know. And then it's like, this is how they are going to treat the promoters, you know. And they really built this independent wrestler's philosophy around that time period. Never give inch is what Stan Hansen would say.
Never give an inch.
Yeah, that's what there's. Yeah, exact word. Yes.
So,
but they were friends, you know. They're friends, you know. They're both promising rookie, not so traditional, but they were aimed to be the top main event guy, and they just had to find out how, you know. And with that money, you know, the Bill Watts and their bookers, you know, Jake the Snake's father, all those people are laughing at them, right? The stupid college football players, you know, they'll be gone soon. No, it's like, no, I'm going to learn the craft and I'm going to look back and say, you know, they'll be sorry. So that they were wrestlers and not a promoters, you know, and that they, you know, they were, you know, trying to find a way to become the top performers, which they became later on, right?
Mm. Maybe not in the way they expected, but definitely they became top performers of that time.
Yeah, and then also not by kissing up, you know, but right, by performing and become somebody worthy and become somebody important and become somebody that, you know, all your peers will respect. That's what Stan Hansen's all about. That's what Bruiser Brody is about, don't you think?
I think so. They were focused on becoming the main attractions to make the business that much better.
Yeah, and then also what's amazing, if you look back and think about today's standard, those were the independent big heavyweight professional wrestlers, rather rookie, right? But they were the ones telling promoters, say, I ain't doing it.
Very different. Yeah,
I learned something. Wrestlers can say no to your finish. You know what I mean? Yeah, if you're worthy, they have to come up with something else.
And,
you know what I'm saying?
So that will play in later in Stan's career because, I mean, he's the one who really brought the lariat, the move the lariat to popularity throughout the world. But we're not there yet. We're back at the 75 around 76.
Right. But the one thing we have to, you know, that make sure that we know at this point is that Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody were two wrestlers, American wrestlers, who really did 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring job. Remember?
Almost never,
huh?
I'm trying to think. I can't think of many times Stan Hansen has been pinned. And if he was, I remember he'd lose tag team matches like in a match with Giant Baba and Stan Hansen when they were a tag team, but Giant Baba would take the pin. It was always, he always stayed protected.
Oh, God. Yeah,
Brody, too.
Yeah. And also, nobody got up from the lariat in counter two. When he uses it, it's finished. You know?
Mm-hmm.
The same way Bruiser Brody's King Kong running knee drop,
mm-hmm.
when he uses it, that's finished. Nobody will kick out at the counter two. If it's finished, he ain't using it.
Now, I know it's kind of fast forwarding a little bit, but I'm interested in this topic when it comes to Stan Hansen's match with Antonio Inoki.
Mm.
Because Inoki is another person who you could also say he's the type.
Rarely does jobs
and doesn't really give an inch, so to speak, either. So kind of not similar personalities,
yeah,
but clashing.
Could be because if there was no Giant Baba, there's no Antonio Inoki.
Right.
See, Ricky Dozan played favorite. You know, Ricky Dozan always plays Giant Baba way ahead of Antonio Inoki or anybody else. For Ricky Dozan, Giant Baba was his here appearing. He was gonna be the next guy, you know. And Inoki was carrying Ricky Dozan's suitcase for 7 years, 6 years, you know. And yeah, that was interesting that the Inoki would say when he become promoter or top main event guy or whomever who can produce this thing, he's doing his way, you know.
So we're dealing with a lot of independent souls, a lot of independent spirits at this time, especially with Brody and Hansen. And so by
76, what was interesting, the same day, Antonio Inoki, Muhammad Ali fight from Tokyo. It's broadcasted into America as before pay-per-view. It was a closed circuit at the movie theaters and other places, 150 locations all through America. And in New York City, there was a Shea Stadium live card. And the live main event was two matches. Stan Hansen against Bruiser Brody's, San Martino's revenge. And also Andre the Giant against Chuck Wepner, remember?
The real Rocky.
Real Rocky, right. So the Shea Stadium show became huge. That made, of course, that Bruno Sammartino will come out as a winner, the count out winning, but the revenge, successfully, made, But that made Stan Hansen that much bigger as a star in WWE area too. And January of 1977, all through 1976, Stan Hansen remained in WWE and had a second round matchup against Bruno Sammartino, and he was in the top cluster of WWF at the time. Okay, and this Stan's WWF run will bring him into New Japan as a top star.
So when did he stop working with WWF around this time? So it was after the Bruno Sammartino stadium
the
match.
The thing is, though, Vince McMahon Sr. is WWF and Antonio Inoki's New Japan Pro Wrestling had a partnership,
mm-hmm.
Between 75 to 85, like about 10-year period, And Vince McMahon, today's been Vince McMahon stopped it. But anyhow, during this, Stan Hansen's New Japan run, he went back to WWE occasionally and had a match like Bob Backlund against Stan Hansen.
Okay, so one-off, special matches.
Or when New Japan had, sent a whole bunch of, wrestlers, Inoki, Sakaguchi, Fujinami, Riki Choshu, that time period that this Stan Hansen occasionally still worked for WWF. Yeah.
It was a different period, so it's not like what we're used to now. If somebody's in WWF, like Shinsuke Nakamura is only in WWF or WWE. Right, right. It's different time. So he would show up sometimes.
Right. It was like wrestlers had a 90-day turnaround contract with Vince McMahon Sr. So you rotate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And after, it's like Sergeant Slaughter worked WWE, but he always go back to NWA Crockett too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that time period. And pretty much basically full-time status, Stan Hansen had run with New Japan 77, 78, 79, 80. Yeah, 77, 78, 79, 80. Yeah, good four-year period. He was top New Japan superstar. The new Stan Hansen, who broke Bruno Sammartino's neck. And this was during the time he had famous Andre the Giant single match, or he had the Hansen Hulk Hogan tag team, Stan Hansen Dick Murdoch tag team, Stan Hansen Mass Superstar tag team. He had a pretty much full-time schedules with New Japan, and he had a single match program against Antonio Inoki's NWF titles. If anybody not familiar with NWF championship, it was a singles world heavyweight title before IWGP.
Mm-hmm. Brought over by Johnny Powers.
Right, right. Ohio company. But it was important in 70s that the championship was brought in actually from America. You know, the title that existed in somewhere else instead of creating it in Japan. See, people believed it. It has to come from America. That title has to actually exist. So Johnny Powers at the time was Inoki's old friend, right? Was a perfect champion to bring in existing world heavyweight title from America and actually losing it and leave it in Japan, you know? Yeah. But the NWF was a huge deal. And 1980, February of 1980, Stan Hansen beat Antonio Inoki for the first time to win the championship. You know how hard it is, you know, for anybody to beat Antonio Inoki in 1980?
I don't think he lost for another 7 years after that. I think it was
right, something like that.
I think
he wasn't even the pinfall. It was a count out. Mm. He still wouldn't do the 1-2-3.
Oh, right. No, it was a couple of years later with Hogan. And again, it was a count out.
Right. So it's like get 1-2-3 in the middle of the ring from Inoki is such a huge deal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But Stan Hansen became big enough superstar, hindsight, that he was big enough superstar that Inoki would let him be the champion.
So by this time, the Japanese crowd really had come to accept him and start to really love him, even though, like you said, he wasn't a baby face, he wasn't a heel, he was just Stan Hansen.
Oh, God, yeah. And also, he was just big guy, you know, to come in and do the running shoulder block to heavy knee drop to punch, kick, stomps. You know, not big about wrestling techniques, but this guy is convincing, like tremendously strong and no gimmick. He just come in and wins.
And I feel like I have to put it in more context because of how big he was and knowing that the average size of a Japanese person is not even close to Stan Hansen's yeah. size. So especially back then, the early 80s, would it be fair to say that a lot of fans in the crowd might not have even seen a foreign person in their life before, and the first one they might see is somebody like Stan Hansen doing what he does?
Traditionally, we had the Japanese television always had American dramas.
In person.
Yeah? Probably.
So that must have been exciting or different or thrilling in some sense because Stan Hansen is larger than life character.
Yeah, yeah. And also I kind of remember that it was like people were kind of like looking for closure to Antonio Inoki, Tiger Jeet Singh story all mm-hmm. through 70s, right?
The
and when Stan Hansen came in, he surpassed Tiger Jeet Singh as an athlete, you know? Yeah. Because Tiger Jeet Singh always fought dirty. Chair shots, you know, the swords, the bloody match, the foreign object, all kinds of things, right? Mm-hmm. Stan Hansen did none of that, you know? He just come in with his own body and he does what he does. And he's so convincing, you know? And something about him likable, though. Heel, but something about him likable. I don't know why.
Do you think it was when he had his matches with Andre the Giant? Is that when people started to turn the corner on him?
Yeah, that too. But all these Anthony Inoki single match program that most Inoki believers in Japan, that in Japanese wrestling fans in 70s and 80s, a lot of people actually believe Inoki was the best in the world, right? People really believed it, though, you know. And as a kid, I was a wrestling, you know, Inoki's fan too, and he was the greatest. Anyhow, that so it was good to have opponent like Stan Hansen, who is genuinely a great athlete, big guy, football and wrestling background, and he no mic, no promo, no storyline. He just get in the ring and have just killer matches week after week after week after week, and it's like people go, I like this guy. And he probably like in the late 70s into 80s, Terry Funk was your favorite cowboy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Stan's bigger and younger, you know?
Yeah, he's different. He ended up being quite different because of his size. Yeah. I mean, his size and his...
Also, in the midst of his popularity, Terry Funk had his first retirement in summer of 1981. That helped too, you know?
Right.
Yeah, Stan Hansen's era.
So he's in New Japan for the 4 years.
New Japan made him a superstar. That's when they had, you know, New Japan had partnership with Vince McMahon Sr.'s WWE, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or when you think about, okay, look some names in 1981, some tour, you know, New Japan tour. Stan Hansen, Hulk Hogan, Dusty Rhodes, Roland Bach from Europe, Andre the Giant, Dick Murdoch, Bad News Allen, Rene Goulet, Pat Patterson, you know, Shika Afa. Yeah, it's like, wow, it's like the entire WWE crew came or something, right?
It was a big crew.
Yeah, yeah. And who was the boss? It's not a Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes, probably bigger name in America, but Dusty Rhodes in Japan was always kind of a guest, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. He was a big, huge name. You know, but he doesn't come in that often, you know, maybe once or twice, maybe once a year. But for Stan, he would be in next tour, back to back. Every tour, you'll be watching Stan Hansen. And people never got sick of him, you know?
He never really repeated himself in the ring. He never, there's some wrestlers, and it works for them. They do what they do. Like Ric Flair. Ric Flair has what he does. He has the Ric Flair match.
If you see Ric Flair's match once, you've seen it all, right?
But he's so good that it works.
Of course.
But Stan Hansen was not like that.
Always different. Yeah.
Every match started a different way. Sometimes it would start outside the ring. Sometimes it would start, he would run at them before the bell or after the bell. It was always unexpected or spontaneous.
Yeah, and no fancy moves. No, probably one or two suplexes.
Just nonstop motion.
Yeah, not... Stan Hansen's not doing German suplex or anything like that, you know?
No. He's just moving. He's 20 minutes into the match, you see him still somehow running around the ring. I mean, he's not the fastest guy in the world. I'm not saying that, but even for the time...
Oh, not even fancy looking.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Just athletic. It looked like he was a real powerful guy.
Very believable.
Very believable.
And one of the most believable guy, right?
Yeah, because he was consistent.
Yeah.
He was even as he got older in his last years in the 90s, he was still one of the top wrestlers in the world, arguably.
Yeah, I think so.
So, but
when you say a big wrestler, you know, I mean, good wrestler, it's not exactly technically sound, you know, wrestler, you know.
But, no, he's not like Okada or something. or you know, he's not. It's not about that. It's
The Malenkos, you know.
Oh, for, right. Or yeah. Even more, yeah, like a very technical, technically sound wrestler, like Dean Malenko. Yeah. No, he wasn't
not
doing
like that,
that
at all.
Power and action.
Yeah.
But also, he was different from Brody too.
Right. More, yeah. It's like that's why they were both stars. It's I can say it's Vinyl Records, you know, side A and side B, and Stan was like a sunshine, and Brody was like a moon, cold moon, yeah, type. Of, it's night and day, kind of different.
Yeah, I can. Okay, I can.
Stan.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, really bright. Yeah, sunshine to a moonlight, you know, to something bright and hot to something blue and cold, you know. And it's not to say which is better, but that's how different Brody and Stan was, you know, they were.
I feel like the
that
one
made great
thing,
team, no?
Oh yeah. And I think the one thing you could always count on is, like you said, that because of the difference is there, but it's not too drastic. And it just led to always those two having exciting matches or interesting and different matches and believable matches too. And not to say,
reading oriented Japanese wrestling fans, you know, they always knew story about Stan Hansen and Jumbo Tsura's rookie year. They always knew Bruiser Brody and Stan Hansen's rookie year as a tag team. They always, you know, Japanese fans always read about Stan Hansen and Bruno Sammartino's breaking neck stories. Then Stan Hansen as a superstar came to New Japan and challenged Inoki. It's like step by step, every Japanese fan kind of followed what Stan Hansen was going to do, you know, this end of 70s into the 1980s. And during 1980 and 1981, there was a big, huge promotional war between Antonio Inoki's New Japan and Giant Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling. It's 1981 is a very important year for All Japan and New Japan. First, New Japan stole. They stole Abdullah the Butcher from All Japan. They signed him away.
That's where it really started.
And then 1 month later, in July of 1981, Giant Baba decided to steal Taiga Jeet Singh from New Japan. They stole it, you know? Then Kim Doc, Taiga Chan Lee, Dick Murdoch from All Japan, went to New Japan, and Chavo Guerrero and a couple other guys went to from New Japan to All Japan. And there's like a 5 or 6, 7, you know, top names, you know, they just went back and forth. And the very end of 1981, who would, you know, would be the last big name, huge name to switch side, like, you know, jumping over the fence kind of thing, right? Stan Hansen shows up the very end of last day of tag team tournament at Sumo Palace, Kuramae Kokugikan, the very last day. Stan Hansen shows up with his street clothes, with his cowboy hat. The main event was Dory Terry the Funks against Bruiser Brody and Jimmy Snuka. Yeah. Then Stan Hansen joined. That was a huge deal.
So Brody was, okay, Brody was in New Japan at this point, or All Japan at this point.
All
too.
Japan, yeah.
So,
and Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody had a 3-year run from that point. Bruiser Brody, Stan Hansen against the Funks so many times. And the Funks was the biggest American legend until that time period. And Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody clearly beat them. Yeah.
That very definitive, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like they are the new generation of the biggest American superstars. And physically bigger, a little bit younger. And not that much younger though, actually. Bruiser Brody is only 4 years younger than Terry Funk, you know?
Oh, wow. So, they're in the same ballpark. They could be in the same school.
Yeah. And actually, Terry Funk and Bruiser Brody were friends in Amarillo.
It's funny, yeah. Just like we were saying earlier, it's just that crew, just like the Minnesota crew, they found themselves in the same places all over the world together.
Yeah, the wrestlers from Tampa too, though. Tampa?
That's for LK Tampa, yeah. Tampa crew.
So many.
Hogan.
Yeah, Minnesota crew, Tampa crew, yeah.
Dick Slater.
And there was so many wrestlers came out of Calgary too, so.
Yeah, they're almost like teams.
Because there was a wrestling school, there was a coach, there was an old-fashioned promoters, and a lot of times family business, wrestlers move. They go into their dojo, they get trained, and then they get started. So there is quite a few places. But before Road Warrior era, Vern Gagne's camp had a lot of wrestlers, you know, debuted there too.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, the Stan Hansen clearly came out of Funk Wrestling Academy, and he beat the teachers. So that Japanese wrestling fans love that kind of story too.
And this is also where they had a great rivalry with the Funks in old Japan, but Hansen and Brody also began a new rivalry with old faces, with Jumbo Tsuda and Genichiro Tenryu.
Yeah, yeah.
Around this time too.
Jumbo and Tenryu are still together, and Tenryu still being babyface. Clearly number two or three, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you had the top foreigners against the top Japanese talent, which made for pretty exciting content.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So that was the big move that Stan Hansen, after he establishing himself as a super, super huge superstar against Antonio Inoki for Channel 10's New Japan Pro Wrestling TV show for 3-4 years. Then he switched side, and all of a sudden, every single match Stan had became dream matches, you know. Stan Hansen against Giant Baba single match, Stan Hansen against Jumbo Tsuda single match, things like Terry Funk against Stan Hansen, you know, Dory Funk against Stan Hansen. They all became dream matches. Yeah.
So at around the time when Stan Hansen was in All Japan, when he first got there in the early 80s, was he wrestling more of tag team matches, or was he wrestling in singles yet?
Yeah, it's the same, because New Japan believer always felt that the Stan Hansen is not going to do the same thing with All Japan Ring, because the wrestlers, All Japan wrestlers are not as tough as New Japan wrestlers. You know, New Japan believers are like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Inoki is so much better than Baba kind of thing, mentality. But when when Stan Hansen went to All Japan, he fit better because there are more Americans there, you know. And actually, Jumbo, Tenryu, other Japanese wrestlers, even young Misawa, they were taller than people like Fujinami and Choshu, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. So actual heavyweight was in All Japan instead.
Yeah, and a lot of the Japanese talent were trained by the same or similar trainers or from the same area. I mean, with Jumbo training in Amarillo too. It's just the Amarillo clan.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jumbo
Tenryu too.
He works like, Tenryu too. They all work like the Funks.
Right.
You know?
It's amazing.
Same elbow, same stomp, same Luthes press, same double arm suplex. Yeah. Oh, even spinning tall hold. Oh, similar. Jumbo, especially, yeah.
So at this time, did Hansen and Jumbo cross paths, or was that later?
Oh, yeah, well, of course, in the working... Working tour, every tour all year long, you know? It's just different dressing room, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, Stan told me once, you know, that during the tour, you know, you go to a small town in Japan, right? And after the show, you know, you look for a place to eat, you know? And a lot of times you ended up walking into a old Chinese restaurant that's open late. And when Stan Hansen went into Chinese restaurant all by himself, he found Jumbo eating there all by himself, you know. But they didn't really sit together, you know. They looked at each other and kind of waved, you know. Then sat in a different table and ate. And Jumbo finished eating, and so he went in, you know, went to pay for it. And he turned around and waved again, and that was their conversation.
So they weren't that close, were they? Were they?
Oh, they were though. But they kind of friend, and almost there's a camaraderie to it that you almost don't need to have actual conversation. It's like that guy's in the same dressing room all the time, you know, and same age almost, and same career, and they wave each other, and I'll see you tomorrow, kind of thing. And I think there were friendship. Yeah.
But at the time, and at the time, I think business must have been so good that these two probably treated each other like coworkers outside of the job.
Stan Hansen, what they have in common, Stan Hansen and Jumbo Tsuda both are so private, you know. They don't really hang out with wrestlers either. You know, they are so private, you know. They eat out. I mean, they go out, step out of, you know, hotel and then eat all by himself, kind of that kind of person, you know.
When Hansen was over in Japan, did he live it up like some other foreigners do, and they like to go out and go to Roppongi and drink?
Oh, he never did that. He never did that. But he encouraged new wrestlers from America. It's like, don't be staying in hotel. You know, get out of hotel, see the world, meet the people, and you will like Japan, kind of thing. Yeah. Both Stan and Brody lectured the younger American wrestlers who came to tour, you know. Even that famous story that the Road Warriors' very first tour, Bruiser Brody was in it. And Bruiser Brody, not publicly, but had Animal and Hulk sit down in front of him, and Bruiser Brody gave him a lecture how to be a star in Japan, and how, you know, if you do this in Japan, they'll do this for you, and do this and do that, and don't do this, don't do that, kind of thing. And Bruiser Brody gave Road Warriors lecture. Not so famous, but yeah. They had this, what do you call it? In Japan, it's a senpai, senpai war.
A mentor or a senior.
Yeah, senior.
A senior and a junior. They're like a senpai, like a mentor. They would mentor the new employees, you could say, or wrestlers who would be kohai or like a junior.
Yeah. So Stan Hansen had that role. Bruiser Brody had the role. And obviously Dory Funk and Terry Funk had that role previously, right?
Yeah. Do you think that system is really important to pro wrestling industry?
It's not just pro wrestling history, but it's a very athletic part that people forget about. These guys are athletes, you know, like you're in the football players, you know, big, huge locker room, you know, and they don't, you know, they may not be greatest friends with each other, but they don't hate each other. And they do look at each other as somebody, you know, you take care of, you know, physically, because you need trust in wrestling.
At this time, because of how popular All Japan was there any feeling or hint of like a competition between wrestlers backstage? Was there a kind of, was it a team effort to improve the company's business, or was it a cutthroat, every man for himself type of situation?
In Japan, it's more, team effort, and also, American dressing rooms are kind of isolated, you know, because Stan will find out all the scoops directly from Giant Baba, but everybody else, you know, in the dressing room, American dressing, not everybody can walk into Giant Baba's dressing room and say, "Hey, what's up?"
Right, you know? Right.
Yeah. So half the time they felt that they were like left in the dark, because American wrestlers really didn't know what was happening next 3 weeks until they are told, you know?
So they had their own camp. The American or foreign wrestlers would kind of be in their own bubble.
Yeah. And Stan understood that there was a huge star in Japan, American star, before Stan Hansen. And Stan Hansen would always bring up two people, Freddie Blassie and Dick Byer, Destroyer, who made star in Japan. And in Stan's eyes, Dick Byer, the Destroyer, and Freddie Blassie, those two are the ones who paved the way for American superstar to become a star in Japan. See, Freddie Blassie was the one telling people that if you act like a star and walk like a star, they will treat you like a star. And Freddie Blassie taught Hulk Hogan, rookie Hulk Hogan, the same thing in Japan. You know, if you act like a star, they will, you know, treat you like a star. And what was interesting is, though, that just as soon as Stan left New Japan and signed with All Japan, Hulk Hogan stayed with New Japan and signed exclusive contract with Inoki's New Japan and turned babyface. So just as soon as Stan left New Japan, Hulk Hogan was there to take his place. That was so interesting.
So that was, it really must have felt like it was a war between New Japan and All Japan then.
At the time, yeah. But somebody like Hulk Hogan looked at the situation and worked the best for his benefit too. Stan's gone, that the spot is open, and Hulk Hogan can become number one American superstar in New Japan and Inoki's rival. And that year, 1982, he became tag team partner of Anthony Inoki and won the tag team tournament. So Hulk Hogan needed Stan Hansen too, you know, first few years. And it's almost very political in hindsight, but we gotta remember this. Stan Hansen signed with All Japan Pro Wrestling, you know, and start working January of 82 and worked All Japan next 20 years straight until he retired 2001.
Yeah, aside from a couple special guest appearances on exhibition or, you know, special dream match shows like the Wrestle Summit or New Japan, the New Japan Super Show with All Japan.
Stan against Vader, you mean talking about?
Right.
Something, yeah, but he
was All Japan guy through and through, matter what. Yeah.
No matter what. Right. All Japan guy.
And he also didn't come back out of retirement and do anything afterwards. He stayed pretty loyal All Japan.
And also when Stan had AWA World Heavyweight title by beating Rick Martel, it was All Japan deal.
So All Japan, they kind of masterminded that situation. What's the story there?
I guess AWA, it was a midst of American wrestling war too, you know. It was before WCW, it was still NWA Crockett. You know, NWA Crockett, Tennessee, AWA, Louisiana, all these existing American promoters got together and ran Meadowlands, if you remember. Remember? They could not go into Madison Square Garden. They wanted to go into New York with, you know, this combined effort, you know. But the closest thing they can get was a Meadowlands in
New Jersey.
East Rutherford, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Stan needed to beat Rick Martel, and he was part of the Pro Wrestling USA?
Pro Wrestling USA, yeah. Pro Wrestling USA.
The combined TV program existed for like 6 months period, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to utilize Stan as their unique talent. And they had, but then again, Stan and Vern Gagne had a falling out, and one night in Denver, Colorado, that Vern told Stan to, you know, put Nick Bockwinkel over for the title, and said, and Stan said, "I ain't doing it." And then he went downstairs to hotel cocktail lounge and start drinking. You know, "I ain't going." And they had to forfeit the title, and then gave the title back to Nick Bockwinkel. I believe it was 1987. But anyhow, yeah, American territory was not where Stan's heart was. Stan's working place was always in Japan. Yeah.
And, I mean, back to, so 84, 85, he's already established, he's more established in Old Japan. He has title matches with Baba. And by this time, he has, like you said earlier, he has a kind of special relationship or different relationship with Giant Baba compared with a lot of other wrestlers, even Japanese wrestlers. He was, from what I'm told, I mean, he never signed an official contract after a while.
It was amazing, right. Working for one wrestling company for over 20-year period, I mean, like, no interference. I mean, just straight 21 year working for one promoter, like a real lawyer, right? They never signed contract. That is amazing, isn't it? For today's standard.
It's very unique, and it shows a lot of trust between the two and a lot of loyalty from
And probably Hansen. The last time any wrestling promoter and a superstar pro wrestler worked in handshake basis, huh?
Must be.
Yeah.
At such a big level, I mean, there's serious money being thrown around, especially at this time. This is not like a small one-time indie show where...
Oh, no.
No, this was... I mean, All Japan was probably financially maybe number two in the world at this point, you could say.
Yeah. Number two or three. Yeah.
Number two or three, yeah.
Always WWE, New Japan, and All Japan, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
So...
And people like Stan Hansen were making $30,000-$40,000 a week.
Amazing.
Yeah, working in Japan 20 weeks a year.
And that was also at a time where the dollar and the yen was worth something different. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. So he told me he was also a very first group of wrestlers who were signed with WWE in the end of 1983 into 1984, Hulk Hogan era begins. All these famous wrestlers, you know, getting exclusive contracts with, you know, WWE, like Roddy Piper, the Paul Orndorff, the, you know, Randy Macho Man Savage, the, you know, all those first group of people. Stan Hansen was among those members, but he chose not to go there, you know. He took Japan over, yeah.
And so he pretty much, the 1980s, he spent pretty much entirely working for Japan and working mostly for All Japan.
Rest of his career. Mm-hmm. Between 1981 to 2001, yes. He was full-time with All Japan.
And the rest of the 1980s, so more into 1985, 86, 87, where he was already established as a
he was regular. Already established 77 as Inoki's big rival. Yeah.
So by this time, he's a real superstar, an established superstar. Were there any other notable incidents or events that happened mid-80s while Hansen was working with All Japan? Like, for example, in 84, when Rikitoshu and his group left, again, Hansen
joined All Japan for 2 years, 85, 86. Mm. And there was a single match program, Stan Hansen against Rikitoshu. And Rikitoshu beat Stan Hansen for the PWF, Pacific Wrestling Federation title, but it was DQ finish. Stan wouldn't do it, you know.
So
the title changed hand though, you know, because PWF rules DQ, DQ finish, you know, the title can still change hands. So Rikitoshu became PWF heavyweight champion by beating Stan Hansen, but Stan never did the job at the time. Yeah, it was interesting.
And by this time, he was working in Japan all the time, but he wasn't living there yet, was he?
No, I don't think so. He was going back and forth. But he is very private about it, because every time I get a home address, you know, I'll send you something. Can I have your address? Sometimes his Stan's address was Jackson, Mississippi. Sometimes his address was Hotchkiss, Colorado. Is there such a town?
I'm assuming there is, but I've never heard of it.
Hotchkiss, Denver. I mean, the Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And one time his address was Waco, Texas, you know? And so he moved quite a bit. But it was always either your place like Colorado or Jackson, Mississippi or Waco, Texas, like way, way out there in the countryside. That's his style. Yeah.
Real cowboy.
Yeah, okay. You lived in Japan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you remember warm toilet seat machine thing.
Yeah, Warmlet.
Yeah.
That's one of the brand names.
Warmlet, yeah. And Washlet, you know, they wash your butt, right?
Yeah.
With water. He fell in love with the thing and he bought, you know, quite a few of those and brought it back home and built in his own basement.
Wow. I had no idea. Yeah.
He had a big, you know, big box, you know, with his suitcase. You know, I saw him in the hotel lobby, you know, before he got on the bus, and I asked him, "What the hell is that box for?" He's like, "I'm buying this." He's like, "He bought the washlet toilet, you know," and he was so excited to put him in his home. Yeah.
It reminds me. I don't know why I'm thinking of the word. Do you know Bakugai?
Yeah, yeah, sure. You go crazy by saying
shopping
right?
spree. He's like a someone who, like, I see people like that at the airport usually. People from overseas who just buy toilet seats and AC or just a lot of goods that they can't get somewhere else. But it's that shows again how much Stan Hansen adapted to Japanese culture. I also heard
Actually, he can go into Japanese izakaya, you know, like a bar and grill izakaya. Mm-hmm. He can order things on his own. Of course, that's easy. But, you know, what to eat, what not to eat, you know. And he was just big 300 pound Stan Hansen. Can you picture sitting in a Japanese izakaya using chopsticks, ordering sake? But he really did that, almost like cliche. But it reminded me of like Black Rain or something.
Oh, that movie with Michael Douglas?
Yeah, yeah. It's like he is American living in Japan kind of thing.
And those izakayas that you're talking about, those are, depending on where they are, if we're talking about Tokyo, those are very small. Very narrow. And usually you can maybe, some of them you can, of course, they're all different sizes, but I'm thinking of big-time ones in, like, Shinjuku, where only four or five people can fit inside. And Stan Hansen, we talked about how big he was. It's hard not to stick out, and that really can wear on you, so I understand why you would want to be private, because there's no escaping if you're Stan Hansen, you're in Japan.
But he was adventuresome enough that he actually sit down and read those, you know, menus, you know, written in Japanese, and... yeah, it's like we're going back and forth, and I want to, you know, stay in the same lane as the day and dates and years. But yeah, I have to point out the fact that a lot of people wonder about how good Stan's Japanese language was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And many interviews, in American interviews, in English speaking interviews, he always answered like, "I never learned," right? Mm. That's not entirely accurate, you know. When he said he never learned, meaning that he never learned the proper grammar or the vocabulary of it. Okay? Therefore, he didn't think he learned. But in reality, Stan Hansen, and you know, he understands Japanese a whole lot more than he can say. You know what I'm saying?
Listening. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, being in the dressing room and being in a Japanese conversation kind of situation, or being only one American gaijin in the entire room and everybody else speaking Japanese, he actually understood a whole lot more than he can say it, but he never lets up. I mean, like the last Mohican, last guy of your kayfabe era, right?
Mm.
That he wouldn't let people know that he understood Japanese. I think he understood most of it. I still do.
Well, I mean, after 20 plus years, and especially, I think he has a Japanese wife as well now, but I'm and it's funny because when
his kids speak perfect Japanese.
Oh, it's amazing.
Shaver, yeah.
It's funny because when he says, I never learned, that's kind of a Japanese style answer.
Being humble?
Yeah. Of course he knows a little bit. I mean, he's a Japanese superstar. No matter what, if you're staying in a place, whether you learn or not, you're going to pick up certain things to survive, because otherwise you just won't survive. So there's a level of, I at least from my personal experience, because I spent a lot of time just, you know, learning on my own before I properly studied Japanese at a university. But before that, I felt kind of the same. I knew what I knew, but I never felt comfortable. So maybe it's that. But on the other hand,
and
I'm
you
sure.
Wouldn't tell people that you're fluent or anything.
Oh, never. No, no.
But actually, you understanding by listening a whole lot more than you can bring out the entire sentence, right?
Yeah. There's input. The input is in my brain. Just the output is, I'm not able to be as, you know, that's what practice is. You got to practice so you could become more fluent. So it's one of those things where if you...
Yeah, so I believe Stan understood Japanese fine.
Absolutely. I think he's okay, for sure.
Yeah, more so than Brody, you know. Brody may be a little bit arrogant that they'll speak English for me, but Stan was like smiling and always like friendly enough, and like he's really charming outside the ring, right? He's always smiling, you know, friendly. And I think he was able to carry a Japanese conversation. Stan Hansen never spoke to me in Japanese, one thing.
Maybe that's because he wanted to protect that part of his life from you, the journalist.
I guess, yeah, yeah.
So he was quite guarded, no matter what. He would...
Very private, yes, yeah.
Was it because of how popular he was?
And also the way he was, you
know? Just his personality?
Yeah, and then he was married to a Japanese woman. He didn't make it public for a long time until he was retired, you know? Yeah.
So by... where are we at? 86?
80, yeah.
So before we wrap part one today, where should we... Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. 1977, 1978, 1979, 1980. Those 4 years, he had a full-time run with New Japan.
Right.
Against Antonio Inoki, huge superstar. Then at the end of 1981, starting January 1982, he became full-time, switched to All Japan, and then worked another 20 years just in Japan. And in 1990, the championship, there was a three singles championship in All Japan. International Heavyweight title, PWF, Pacific Wrestling Federation title, and UN, Tenryu's belt, that the UN, United National belt. They were going to combine these three major single title into one. Now we know, we all know, as a Triple Crown. The Triple Crown story was like a 1 year long storyline. Stan got two titles, and Jumbo held Stan held PWF title and UN title, and Jumbo kept his international title. Those double champion, you know, went against each other, and Stan and Jumbo's program lasted a year or so, then became Triple Crown. That was 90s. It's already 30 some years ago, but yeah. So he was part of the NWF storyline. He was part of the Real Tag Team Championship storyline. He was part of the Triple Crown storyline, right? Yeah. And also he developed many American tag team partners in Japan. Stan and Ted DiBiase tag team, Stan Terry Gordy tag team, Stan Danny Spivey tag team, Stan Johnny S tag team, Stan and Steve Williams tag team. So he had more partners besides Bruiser Brody. So
eventually Tenryu as well, right?
Yeah. That was so popular. Yeah. I mean, so popular.
Speaking of Triple Crown, wasn't Stan Hansen a part of when Tenryu won the Triple Crown? Wasn't he at ringside kind of supporting him? Do you remember that match? It was 89, 1990. Yeah,
it's kind of skipping, but
skipping. Yeah. I'm skipping ahead.
Yeah. Stan and Tenryu's friendship storyline, right?
Yes. Yeah, after the Triple Crown, what we were talking about earlier, the Jumbo and Stan Hansen kind of year-long Triple Crown story. We can talk more about that next time.
Also, in 1990, when SWS, the new group, Super World Sports, the new guy, you know, new company, started with Tenryu, and Tenryu and his guys, like 15 guys, left All Japan, right? Mm-hmm. And made All Japan kind of a skeleton.
Right.
That's when Stan Hansen became another focal point. This guy stayed with All Japan and stayed as a main event. People like that, you know?
Yeah. And he did the same thing in a different context, but he did it again 10 years later.
Yeah, yeah. So he's like a loyal guy, you know?
And very important to All Japan history, All Japan Pro Wrestling's history.
Because he had a single match. Stan had a single match program against Baba, single match program against Jumbo, tag team and single match program against Tenryu. Then he fought every single, you know, four pillars, you know, Misawa, Kawada, Kobashi, you know, Taue, all the way down to Akiyama. He was there to face each and every one of them until the end.
Do you think with those guys, those four, the Taue and the Misawa and Kobashi, do you think Stan
Kobashi or Kawada? Well, actually, it was very beautiful because people sensed Stan was aging, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the rather young Kawada, Kobashi, younger Misawa fighting against 40-some-year-old, almost 50-year-old Stan, right? It's like Stan still be as good as he was 10 years. And then he really had beautiful single match against people like Kobashi, Kawada, and Misawa. Yeah, yeah. He still had it.
He never had an off year. He seemed like he was on 100% whenever he was active.
Yes, slowing down a little, though not as devastating as when he was 1980, but the people kind of grew with him. I mean, Stan's aging right in front of Japanese audience. The Japanese audience really witnessed how Stan aged and really fell in love with him again. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And when we think about aging, we know that our eyesight often deteriorates with age too. And Stan Hansen is kind of infamous for his his lack of eyesight, apparently.
Yeah, and then outside the ring, he was famous for his Coke bottle glasses.
Big Coke bottle glasses. Yeah, I believe he still wears them today.
Yeah, and then he smiles beyond that too, you know?
He has, he doesn't strike someone as he's not like a Clint Eastwood kind of cowboy. He's not a mean, scary guy. Like you said, he's more of a sunshine. He's fiery. He's happy.
Yeah, yeah. And then he talks like Southern guy, you know? Oh, yeah.
He's very believable. Would you say he's on the same level of popularity as someone like John Wayne in Japan?
Probably. See, if you know anything at all about John Wayne, you have to be a little bit older, right? And it all depends on how many years, how many decades you were in front of the audience. And Stan was in front of a Japanese audience all through 70s and 80s and 90s into millenniums. It's like, that guy's got to be popular. You know, I mean, he outlasted all the cartoons. He outlasted all the soap operas on TV. He outlasted all the baseball players on TV. And Stan Hansen always looked the same, you know. And there's a trust, you know. If Stan Hansen's on TV, you know, I'll stop and watch. You know what I'm saying?
He's a big star. He seems to have transcended.
And also, this is like, there's no fancy moves, you know. And but for somehow, his match is kind of good. I mean, it's so hard to explain because he doesn't do anything fancy, right?
I think he knows how to,
brawls.
I think he knows how to bring out some kind of reaction or emotions from his opponents.
Yeah.
And it's all because of how he does, because of how spontaneous he wrestles. His matches with Kenta Kobashi are going to be a lot different than his matches with someone like Misawa because of Misawa's personality. Kobashi.
You have to slightly change what you do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And his style is good because it's easily adaptable. It can fit in any sort of situation, a gimmick, like a hardcore match or a regular major league match or tag team match, whatever. He never had to compromise much of who he presented himself to be.
Right. Oh, to wrap up today's, very first episode of Stan, he understood that the mentality or mindset of Japanese wrestling fans very well too. That Stan told me that, you need big bad gaijin in Japanese wrestling. Gaijin meaning international foreigner, right? That the reason he felt that Japanese wrestling always needed big bad gaijin was that if all the matches are Japanese against Japanese, Japanese babyface against Japanese heels, it's just like regular society and social structure that the older guys who win and younger guys who will be underdog, this and that. It's like so much, similar to what you see in the real world out there, like a social structure. You will need big, bad gaijin, American gaijin in wrestling, where you can't do anything about it, physically. You know, there's no logic. Big gaijin will always be strong. There's no logic to it, and I'm that. That's right. Because Japanese against Japanese, you look too deep into it, whose mentality or psychology or who's going to overcome their fear or who's going to conquer or whatever. What Stan was looking at was that none of those logic will work if you have big, bad, big gaijin come in and destroy everything. He's like your Godzilla.
And that's because of how people would react to that. People in the crowd in Japan would react to someone like that because
it's so big and so strong, you can do anything about it, you know? Yeah.
So I think that's a nice way to tie it up and wrap it for today, because
right. So we covered 70s, late 70s, New Japan Stan, and WWE Stan, and now finally joined and found his home in Japan as Old Japan, and working for Giant Baba for 20 years after that. And he retired basically when Baba died and Jumbo died, and he decided to, you know, end his career with it. And yes, all in all, he was Old Japan superstar. Yes.
And before we go, would you have any recommendations for our listeners if they want to watch
Stan's
any
matches?
Yeah, if they're not familiar
or
with...
Or if you are in New Japan world, you know, you can always go back to archive of early 1977, 78, or 79, or the one Stan won the title. You can find Inoki against Stan in New Japan world. And other than that, you will be able to find a lot of Stan's matches on YouTube, you know. Stan and Tenryu's tag team matches are always kind of good for me, you know. Stan and early, you know, Baba's match actually is pretty good. Jumbo and Stan can be kind of almost, not a boring, but like... something to do with Jumbo's body size, that he works like an American, so it doesn't come off like Japanese matches all that much. So I say Stan against Kawada, Stan against Kobashi, Stan against Misawa is very good material to study, you know. Slowing down, aged veteran Stan, still working around, not in his prime, but he can still have very, very smart wrestling match, you know. That kind of thing.
And his match style and his way of wrestling really progresses into the 90s, and we see not a different Stan Hansen, but we see a different layer or different form.
Yeah,
of
I
him.
Think so. Yeah, yeah.
So
like autumn of his wrestling career, and he's becoming more and more babyface without turning babyface, you know. And it was people decided, you know, people pretty much decided that Stan is babyface now, you know.
Yeah, and he never changed. It was always...
Oh, no, same. Worked the same. And always worked against Japanese or against American. He's on his own. Yeah.
It was always in the hands of the fans to decide what they wanted from him. How they wanted him to act, or what they wanted to cheer or boo.
And also, it was good. This is so good about wrestling that during 90s, at the Budokan show, you know, I saw things like, you know, fans will come up to Stan and try to talk to him. It's like grandparents were watching him, my parents were watching, and I'm watching, and my little baby's watching. It's like a 3 or 4 generations wrestling fan watching Stan Hansen. Oh my gosh, you know? Yeah.
So he means a lot.
I think so. Yeah.
So we're going to continue the rest of this profile series on
Stan. Yeah, because he had the, you know, WCW run, if you remember, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then also Wrestling Summit is another very important one to talk. You know, we can talk about.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next week at the top of the show. That and the other New Japan show we mentioned earlier with Hansen and Vader.
The Hansen Vader happened in WCW too. You know, because the match was so good that the WCW wanted to reproduce it in their pay per view, so they did that too. Yeah.
So there's lots to dig into next time. So before we.
Yes.
Before we head out, Fumi, what's your Twitter handle so people can contact you?
Okay, Fumihiko Dayo, FumihikoDayo, Fumihiko Dayo on Twitter, or you can just find me, Fumi Saito, on Facebook.
Yeah, and I'm at Justin M. Nipper, KNIPPER, on Twitter, and thanks for all the comments lately. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back next time with part 2 of our Stan Hansen series. So, Fumi, can you take it away?
Yeah, we have a lot more to talk about. So, so long from Tokyo. I'll see you next week, huh?
Write that down.